May it please the Court. Chief Judge Baker, members of this Court, my name is Captain Robert Meek, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Potter, we represent the appellant, Major Michael Scalato. The government continually failed to comply with six discovery orders from the military judge, and as a result, the military judge dismissed with prejudice. This Court should affirm the military judge because he did not abuse his discretion and use the proper test to remedy discovery violations. Here, the Army Court erred as a matter of law in two ways. First, the Army Court erred when it added the requirement that willful misconduct is necessary to dismiss with prejudice. Second, the Army Court based its conclusions on facts directly opposite of those found by the military judge. Now, as to the first error.
Just to be clear, are we reviewing the military judge's actions or the CCA's?
Your Honor, it would be both. There is case law that says on a 62, this court pierces and goes directly to the military judges, but that is usually for a suppression of evidence type 62 appeal, Your Honor. So it's our position that you would review both. And in this case, the Army Court is the one who committed the error. So you would be reviewing the Army Court's error and upholding it. But if you hold that the Army Court committed error, you would also be holding that the military judge did not abuse his discretion.
Well, I mean, we have to take the facts the military judge found unless they're clearly erroneous. The CCA adopted those, finding they weren't clearly erroneous.
Absolutely,
so
Your Honor.
All we're left with is a de novo review of the law. And, I mean, it seems to me that it's part and parcel the same thing.
Yes, Your Honor, but in both the CCA and in this court, the military judge's remedy is reviewed for an abuse of discretion. So the facts, as you said, can only be overturned if they are clearly erroneous, but its conclusions of law are reviewed de novo, and then the remedy is abuse of discretion. So as to the first error, the Army Court found that willful misconduct is necessary to dismiss the prejudice. Such a requirement does not exist in military or federal courts when enforcing discovery orders. The military judge used the proper law, the Galinsky test, in evaluating the proper remedy for the government's discovery failure.
Do you mind if we ask you other questions? I know
go ahead.
It's our right to do though. But what did the military judge find, if anything, regarding the availability of evidence and the certainty that the appellant the accused in the end receive all the evidence he should have received? And I'm not asking for argument. I'm asking you for the point in the findings of fact, conclusions of law. What's on the table in terms of what in the end he received?
Yes, Your Honor.
Particularly with reference to the material from West Virginia.
Yes, Your Honor. Now, the material of West Virginia was allegedly put on a thumb drive and then sent to the government. So as to that thumb drive, the military judge specifically found that there's no way of ascertaining if those printed documents compromise everything on the thumb drive or that the first or second thumb drives were mirror images or different.
And you're also relying on 20... paragraph C.
I believe that is, Your Honor. And also,
and so that, in your view, that is a finding of fact which is not clearly erroneous because the CCA did not find it to be clearly erroneous.
Correct, Your Honor. It's worth noting that the Army Court found that the military judge's facts were not clearly erroneous, but yet they based their conclusions on facts that they found that were directly opposite. As to in its conclusion paragraph, the Army Court found that the accused came into possession of all known evidence they were seeking. And that is absolutely not true. The military judge specifically found, as to Dr. Krieg, that he is unavailable and his notes are unavailable, and the defense requested both of those.
Was there a mechanism to remedy that other than dismissal with prejudice?
Are you asking about that one specifically, Your Honor?
Or yes. Also? Now, yeah, I'm switching to Dr. Krieg now.
Your Honor, as to only Dr. Krieg, it is possible that the military judge could have ordered a stipulation of expected testimony, and that was in the works, but the defense and the government could not agree on the exact contents of his testimony. But it's also important to note that the military judge didn't order dismissal only because of the violation as to Dr. Krieg. He found that the totality of the circumstances warranted that the only way the accused could ever receive a fair trial was to dismiss the case with prejudice, because the prejudice was so great and that no other lesser remedy could cure those violations.
Well, going not forward. that he couldn't receive a fair trial.
Right.
He couldn't, the only way
is. Right. The only way is that it couldn't happen because it's impossible.
Why don't you walk through that argument? You have Dr. Craig, and is it your view that there is no way to stipulate in a manner most favorable to the accused what he would have testified to?
Correct, Your Honor, because when he was initially contacted by the defense, he says, this case was a long time ago, and I have my report, which the defense eventually received about 9 months after requesting it. I have my report, but I also have my notes, which I would need to go through, that would be a lot more valuable than just the report. And in order to get those notes, we would need Dr. Krieg. Now, during the government's over a year delay, Dr. Krieg died.
But also, there were a couple of times where you were on the eve of trial. This is a defense witness, and the defense never gained the notes at that time.
Correct, Your Honor, because they requested Dr. Krieg, and he was denied by the government. And the defense did not discover the importance of Dr. Krieg until after the government, 6 months after they requested, got the family court to unseal its documents. The specific instance of Dr. Krieg, or the specific instance of denying Ms. LRE as witnesses, those in and of itself may not have warranted a dismissal of prejudice. But when you look at the totality, if you look at the mosaic with each of these different pieces, that is what the military judge focused on.
Can I just get you back to the question posed by the chief judge? So it's your view, your position, that there is no stipulation that could have adequately addressed the absence of Dr. Krieg's testimony.
Correct, Your Honor. And that's also what the military judge found. So that's what this court must defer to.
Wait, where did the military judge find that?
He did in his concluding paragraph, Your Honor, in evaluating the prejudice. He said that, and I'll just have to get back to your own rebuttal on that, Your Honor, about what specifically said as to the stipulation of expected testimony.
You're welcome to grab the findings of fact, because I suspect there'll be other questions.
Sure, I'll
call upon that. If you want to take a moment and you're welcome to save it for rebuttal, but you're also welcome to pick it up right now.
Your Honor, I think one of the things, and I'll better fully address it on rebuttal, but I think one of the things that should be emphasized is the military judge found, and he specifically evaluated the possibility of a stipulation of expected testimony, and he specifically found that would not be adequate to ensure a fair trial.
So besides Dr. Krieg and his notes, the military judge referred to evidence, quote, that has already been lost, unaccounted for, or left to the devices of a third party. What else is he talking about there?
Your Honor, I think mainly he's talking about the box. The box was presented to the trial counsel in March of 2013.
Okay, but weren't the contents of the box adequately presented to the defense by the time that this process was over and new trial counsel was appointed?
We don't know, Your Honor, because it had been in the hands of an interested witness for over a year who had already withheld evidence, intentionally or unintentionally. So for over a year, it had been in the hands of an interested witness. So as the military judge correctly found, it is impossible to ascertain.
But don't we run that risk in any case where the interested party has created the file? We don't know what that interested party might have included in the file. And whether it was 1 week or 1 year, we don't know whether the interested party would have destroyed evidence. Isn't it awfully speculative at that point?
It's not speculative, Your Honor, because the prosecutor had a minimum to ask her what was in the box. He had the duty to inspect that box, and when he received what he thought were complete contents, he should have double-checked, and as the defense did, and noticed there were pages missing. There were things that were referenced that were not disclosed. And rather,
did the military judge ask Mrs. MS what was in the box and whether anything had been lost in the ensuing 2 years? Or 1 year or whatever it was?
I believe, Your Honor, she believed that she had disclosed everything. So the implication was that she had eventually disclosed everything. but that is also coming from an interested party who said that she thought she disclosed things, but then clearly did not. So it's not just the we're speculating. It's the military judge specifically found that it is impossible to determine if there was evidence that was lost or corrupted. So this court must defer to that absent that it is clearly erroneous, and it's not clearly erroneous.
Is there anything else out there besides the potential for evidence not being included from that box and Dr. Krieg? Is there anything else out there?
Well, one kind of causes the other, Your Honor. It's almost like a domino effect, for lack of a better term. If the government had disclosed the entire contents of the box and also the existence of the box, the Army Court's opinion focuses on that the trial counsel disclosed what he knew. They didn't disclose the existence of the box, and the military judge didn't know about the box for over a year. So we've got the clock running, and the government flies in witnesses thinking that it has complied with its discovery obligations when clearly it hasn't. In the September hearing, the trial, when asked by the military judge, because the defense brings to the military judge's attention, hey, we think there are inconsistent statements out there, and we've requested them. They existed in the box, they found out 6 months later. But the trial counsel in that hearing says that if there was something inconsistent said, this is on page 33 of the record, my dad didn't do this, the government would have a duty to turn it over and would have, but we don't have anything like that. So we've got the government saying 6 months after the defense request exculpatory statements or inconsistent statements, and 6 months before they disclose it, saying that they don't exist. It's not saying we don't know. They're saying they don't exist.
What about the overall delay?
Yeah. Are you talking about as the prejudice, Your Honor?
Yeah, just the overall delay. Because of the government's continued refusal to comply with the military judge's orders and because of the prosecutor's complete misunderstanding of his obligations.
That's exactly a proper characterization, Your Honor. And the military judge tried continuance 3 previous times, saying, government, you have not complied with your discovery obligations. This was not the first, second, or the third time the judge had tried a lesser remedy. He put the government on notice in that September hearing that to take a hard line on discovery thus invites disaster at trial. So the year of a delay between the defense's discovery request and the government's assumably complete disclosure, but as the military judge held, we don't know if it's complete because that is impossible to ascertain because of the year delay. And it's also important to note that the defense specifically requested a preservation order of evidence, and the trial counsel did not disclose that to any witnesses, specifically Mrs. M.S. She was the one who was in possession of much of the evidence, yet the military judge and the defense did not know that.
Counsel, if in your view, would the case for appellant be stronger, weaker, the same if the military judge had based this dismissal on prosecutorial misconduct?
It would be the same, Your Honor, and here's why. Prosecutorial misconduct would certainly give the military judge grounds to dismiss the prejudice. But in his sound judgment, he found that the discovery violations alone were so great that they warranted a dismissal of prejudice. So in his view, he did not need the specific finding of prosecutorial misconduct because he could rule on the narrowest issue before him, and that is the discovery violations. Does that
yes.
adequately answer?
Yes. In your view, in terms of the prejudice analysis, is it appropriate for the military judge to consider what you refer to as extreme and unwarranted restrictions on appellant, the accused, since this comes up, or should the prejudice analysis really be on whether the accused is now capable of getting a fair trial?
It's primarily the second thing you brought up, Your Honor, about the receiving a fair trial, but the, for lack of a better term, hardship in his living conditions, that's a secondary concern. So the military
judge... So it's still, in your view, part of the prejudice analysis?
Yes, Your Honor, because it goes to his ability to adequately prepare a defense. He can't travel to places and get a release order from those family court records because he's confined to post. He has to ask for permission. So However, it is secondary, and the military judge correctly found that the primary reasons are his ability to secure a fair trial. Now, going back to the Galinsky test, which the military judge used as the proper test, although bad faith is a factor under the Galinsky test, it is not, as the Army Court held, a specific requirement for dismissal with prejudice. And because the military judge evaluated the proper factors and chose a remedy within that range, he did not abuse his discretion. If there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
So done. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Baker, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Major Janae LaPierre, and I, along with Captain Kerry Ward, represent the government in this case. First, the Army Court did not engage in impermissible fact-finding under Article 62. Second, dismissal with prejudice is not an appropriate remedy where a military judge applies an erroneous view of the law. Third, even if there was prosecutorial misconduct in this case, appellant cannot prevail because he cannot show prejudice.
Did the CCA conclude that the military judge's factual finding in paragraph 20C, which appears on page 5, did they determine that that was a clearly erroneous finding? And here I'm referring to, the court has no way of ascertaining if the printed documents comprise everything that was stored on the thumb drives, or if there were only two thumb drives. All that can be said with certainty is that all of the evidence in the box did not make its way onto the thumb drive that was provided to defense.
Your Honor, the Army CCA did not find that that was clearly erroneous. They adopted the military judge's findings of fact. They said that there was nothing clearly erroneous, so they were just looking at it as a matter of law.
Does that finding suggest that we do not know or the military judge could not determine whether in the end the defense received all the information that it might have received?
Well, Your Honor, I think it could. I think the difficulty in this case, tying that to the reasons for the dismissal with prejudice, this is a very lengthy findings of fact, conclusions of law by the military judge, and not everything that appears in that findings of fact section is subsequently relevant to the basis for his decision, which is what the Army CCA was reviewing, which is then what this court is looking at. The military judge specifically based his decision on discovery violations about the disclosure of the box, not the contents of the box, the fact that it was simply the existence of it wasn't disclosed in a more timely fashion to the defense, the plastic banana, and the production of Miss Ellie. He subsequently talked a little bit later about the mental health records and the failure to preserve evidence, but those are the only things the military judge specifically based his ruling on. So there was nothing. A basis for his decision was not, for example, that there was evidence that was lost or destroyed, that therefore that should be the reason that appellant could not receive a fair trial, or that this case should not go forward.
Now you say that was the only basis, talking about, for instance, the mental health records. But in fact, they asked for them back in March of 2013. There were mental health records. They were relevant, and trial counsel never asked.
Yes, Your Honor. That is correct.
Trial counsel can avoid his duties under Brady and under the RCM by turning a blind eye or refusing to put his hands on evidence that he would have to turn over if he received it?
Your Honor, no, with the caveat that this court's cases, federal cases, would indicate that if a prosecutor knows that something is exculpatory, would be Brady, then you have a responsibility to turn it over. In this particular case, the issue is one of due diligence, I guess, is the issue did the prosecutor fail some duty by not taking possession of that box at the time that he became aware of its existence? And
for disclosing the existence of that box, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
He definitely is accountable for the knowledge. The CCA relies on the fact that the government didn't have custody of the box, but it had custody of the knowledge that the box existed.
Yes, Your Honor. And
did it disclose that knowledge to the defense?
No, Your Honor. Because, and the government's, during the 39A session on this motion to dismiss, the first trial counsel testified that the reason he didn't do anything further was because he thought that he had everything. He had this discussion with Mrs. MS about needing anything that was relevant. He understood that she had some kind of system or some kind of collection of things that might be relevant to this case.
So why is this not a violation of Rule 3.4 that says that a lawyer shall not fail to make reasonably diligent efforts to comply with a legally proper discovery request? You're saying that the trial counsel can just say, okay, I see this big box on the kitchen table in front of me. We have this woman who has created this, who is very much an advocate for the conviction of this person. But I, the trial counsel, I am not going to look through those documents at all. I'm not going to even disclose the existence of that box to the defense. How is that not prosecutorial misconduct under Rule 3.4?
Well, Your Honor, this court has said in Meek this court defined prosecutorial misconduct in Meek, and it's any action or inaction. It could violate something like those standards. But this court has also found that there has to be something more.
What about the request for any emails? And there was tons of emails.
Yes, Your Honor. This is a case where
the request for the witnesses that were clearly relevant. Clearly relevant and had exculpatory information, and the government fought them tooth and nail, every single one of them.
Well, Your Honor,
I mean, doesn't it start to add up to something that looks really, really bad?
Your Honor, the sum total of this case probably doesn't look good. I mean, I think that's fair to say.
Said it in your brief.
Yes, Your Honor. But
I mean, whether it's prosecutorial misconduct or not, don't you agree it's gross, willful, and wanton negligence? Here is box. I will not look in box. I will assume that Mrs. MS, who really, really, really wants to get this guy, has told me everything I need to know.
After I've told her that anything she tells me, I'll have to turn over to the defense.
Yes, Your Honors. Obviously, this is a case where the prosecutor...
I mean, do you think that signaled to her, please be forthcoming and give me things?
Your Honor, Mrs. MS testified, and she said she did not... She didn't take it that way.
Testified that he didn't tell her what relevant meant, right?
Yes, Your Honor. She also testified, though, that she understood that she shouldn't destroy everything and that she needed to turn things over.
Great. I just said great.
There's some skepticism, one might suggest, coming from the bench as to the conduct of the government in this case. Understanding that skepticism, what would lead the government to believe that nonetheless it should prevail in this case on the issue of whether this should have been dismissed with prejudice or not?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, it goes back to whichever way the court looks at this. If it's looking at under the rubric of discovery law, which is what the military judge based his ruling on and which is what the CCA was reviewing, the military judge, he based his view on an erroneous view of the law. Now, this court could...
What was the erroneous view of the law?
That the trial counsel has a duty to take possession of evidence or to search evidence held by cooperating witnesses or
civilians. Let's stipulate that, just for the sake of following the argument, let's say that the court is of the view that the prosecutor had a duty to so do.
I'm sorry, sir.
What?
He had a duty to.
To take custody and disclose the box. Why did the military judge err in this case?
Well, Your Honor, the remedy is supposed to fit the wrong in this case. And part of the wrong in this case, what we're always looking at when it comes to discovery, even post-trial, is the appellant's ability to get a fair trial, or whether or not.
And doesn't that hinge on paragraph 20C in the finding that they cannot know if the defense has received everything?
Yes, Your Honor.
This is not a trick question. would it be fair to say that it'd be hard to get a fair trial if you don't get all the evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. Although there's a totally separate body of case law out there that addresses lost or destroyed evidence, I believe that there's an Air Force.
But this isn't lost.
No, nor destroyed. Well, we don't think.
Or if it was, it's because of the government's failure to do something with respect to an interested witness, right? And the evidence that some of the evidence that they did get was pretty exculpatory, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what do you do about the death of the doctor that wrote a 20-page or so report that seemed to suggest that, you know, that this person probably didn't do it?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, in this case, I think the Army CCA adequately addressed that, which is that, once again, if we go back to the remedy, which is supposed to be the least drastic there is to...
Should have, could have, would have, he didn't think that he could. And the question is, did he abuse his discretion, not whether there was some other thing he could have done, but whether, in total, looking at everything that he looked at, whether he abused his discretion?
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, I understand it. You would like us to say, well, gosh, you know, they could have done this or they might have done that. I'm not sure that that's the test.
No, Your Honor, it isn't. And in Dooley and in Gore, what's different in those particular cases, those were also Article 62 appeals, and I believe it's in Dooley, the Army CCA or the service court simply just disagreed with the remedy that the military judge had fashioned, but everybody agreed that the law had been violated. So then we were just talking about the remedy. The same thing is true in Gore. And this case is different because the Army CCA found that the military judge applied an erroneous view of the law. Whatever his other factual findings are, he based his decision on a conclusion that the prosecutor had a requirement to take possession of the box. Now, this court can expand Williams. Williams is the case that is probably most useful in this regard. And in that case, this court laid out very clearly...
Right, but my question to you was stipulating, for the sake of the question, that the CCA got that wrong, and the trial counsel did have a duty to do something with that box other than to instruct her not to let him know about anything in it. Assuming, for the sake of the question alone, that that's the case, why did the military judge abuse his discretion? So the abuse can't come from the fact that the trial judge thought the trial counsel had a duty to do something with that box. It has to come from somewhere else. So where's the somewhere else?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, in Coleman, this court said that we look at disclosure issues in a two-step analysis. You determine whether the information or evidence was subject to disclosure or discovery, and second, if there was non-disclosure, you test the effect on the non-disclosure in the appellant's trial. This case is at an interesting juncture because it's pretrial. And so as the Army CCA pointed out, the appellant is in possession of the known information that he was seeking. If there's prejudice to the appellant or his ability to get a fair trial, it really rests on the question of Dr. Krieg and his untimely death. Everything else that the appellant seeks, he has received. Now, I understand if
counsel,
not what the military judge found.
Let's go back a minute. Yes. Let's just assume that the military judge didn't err and that there was a violation of the discovery provisions. Now, from that, what does the government think would be a proper remedy in this case, if anything?
If we were to stipulate that they should have taken possession of the box, and
if you were to stipulate that the military judge got it right on the substantive discovery law, and all we're talking now about remedy, is there a remedy for that violation that the government thinks would be appropriate in this case?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's difficult to say because the fact of whatever was lost or missing wasn't really litigated at the 39A. The military judge, there's various witness testimony about the different thumb drives or the evidence, but I believe that this court would have to send it back for additional factual findings at the trial level to support, to find out if there's really lost or destroyed evidence. I mean, that really wasn't litigated, and that wasn't the basis of the defense counsel's motion. Their motion was to dismiss for prosecutorial misconduct.
But if we accept what the military judge said in paragraph 20C, that he doesn't know, and presumably no one would know, if there is evidence missing, and taking that finding of fact that the CCA accepted, and taking the fact that Dr. Krieg is not available, Has there been any prejudice to the defendant in this case, to the accused in this case?
Well, Your Honor, there's prejudice to the appellant with the loss of Dr. Creed. Clearly there is. But with that other, with whatever else may have been missing from thumb drives, it's difficult to test for prejudice at this point because, once again, this was not litigated at the trial level as a lost evidence type issue or a destroyed evidence type issue. And in those types of cases, I mean, there is a whole set of cases out there. There's an Air Force case called Terry about this particular issue. And if that's the allegation, then the defense counsel has to come in and show that it was exculpatory. It's not enough just to say, well, we've lost something or something's unavailable to me. It has to be exculpatory for them to
get relief. The problem is, how do they know it's exculpatory if it was in the possession of a third party and they don't know that they never got it?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's sort of a catch-22 for the defense.
Yes, Your Honor. And this brings me back to the difficulty of adopting the military judge's view of the law or of expanding Williams beyond what it stands at now. Because if that happens, this potentially is going to be the case consistently because there's always going to be cooperating witnesses, civilians who have control of evidence, and absent some kind of specific request from the defense or...
Well, why shouldn't the trial counsel in this case, the first time he was shown the box, say, okay, I'm going to have to go through that. I need to take that with me, which was done a year later.
Yes, Your Honor.
But at that point, had he done that, not for the purpose of looking for exculpatory evidence, but for the purpose of preparing the government's case in chief. And in doing that, if there is exculpatory evidence, that's disclosed at that time, and that's the way I think the system is supposed to work. No surprises. The way it worked in this case is that the complaining witness who had a stake in it dribbled out the evidence that she felt was appropriate on a basis that we don't know. Well, it's almost knowing that you don't know and you're happy with it from the trial counsel's perspective.
Counsel, hypothetical question, but if the banana, the testimony of Ms. LRE, Dr. Krieg's report, the emails between the wife and the accused, the recantation, the mental health records, etc., it all been disclosed to the defendant, like at the earliest possible time that they were requested, what do you suppose would have happened to this case?
Well,
a motion to dismiss.
It probably would have failed. I don't even think we would have gotten there. I think the issue is, though, in part, is that not all of those things, and the military, the Army CCA went through this. With regard to Ms. Ellie, the government denied her production or actually fought a deposition request. She never showed up on the defense's initial witness list. So as the Army CCA pointed out, to find a violation with regard to her is difficult to see.
But that's not my question, right? My question is, when she did come and testify, did she testify consistently with the government's theory of the case? The answer is no. It's the exact opposite, right?
Ms. L.E., ma'am? Ms. L.R.E.? She
said it didn't happen.
The deposition indicated, right, that she did not remember. She didn't remember the little girl and that nothing had ever happened. Yes, Your Honor.
That's not what the little girl had said.
Right. She had indicated that she had been present. But
that it happened to her, too.
But Ms. L.R.E., that followed the process that is, it's an adversarial process. And the government did deny production of her initially, but the defense never asked for her initially as part of their witness list for the first trial. The first time that she becomes an issue is when the defense files a motion for a deposition of her after trying to contact her. The issue here is in part, and the same thing happened with Dr. Krieg. There's no specific, if this court reviews the discovery request that defense counsel filed, it's contained in Appellate Exhibit 10, there's no mention of family court records. Those were turned over with the initial discovery provided by the government, and it was through then, apparently, the defense counsel discovered that Dr. Creek existed and that they wanted to talk to him. But
counsel,
he was never...
You've just heard a litany of concerns expressed by Judge Ryan, and you admirably have conceded both here today during oral argument and in your brief that at a minimum, there were missteps, significant missteps by the trial counsel here. How would you have this court write an opinion that would say no problem here, that wouldn't also send a signal to everyone, all the trial counsel in the future, that you can play this, engage in this type of gamesmanship?
Well, Your Honor, the tests are it's a legal test, and this court has never, where we're talking about a pretrial issue, and the defense counsel ultimately comes into possession of all the information they were seeking through their discovery request, then there can be no prejudice in his ability
so
to...
So that's the test.
As a trial counsel, that ends well is the test?
Right.
Well, Your Honor,
that's the Brady rule, that all's well that ends well, or better late than never, and that satisfies Brady?
Well, Your Honor...
I know that's not what you're saying, but we're still looking for the principle of law that the government's trying to defend.
Yes, Your
which
Honor.
Which a court would be prepared to put its name on.
Well, Your Honor, I think the difficulty in this case is if this court adopts something more, then we're talking about something that is a best practices standard. What you could have done better. Certainly, I think any trial counsel that is following this case or reads this opinion, I would be very surprised if they would want to repeat this particular
Wait, but
process.
What's the principle of law that the government seeks to defend here? Is this about protecting the ability to proceed with this case, or is this about a principle of law? And if it is about a principle of law, what principle of law does the government think it's defending here today? And you may answer my question.
Yes, Your Honor. The government obviously wants this case to proceed. And I think the principle of law that we are here to defend is this court's position in Williams, which lays out very clearly what the government's requirements are when it comes to searching its own files, closely related files, and when we talk about anything beyond that, it's a case-by-case basis. And in this particular case, the difficulty with that box is hindsight is 20/20. We have a trial counsel who testified that he thought that he had everything. We have a civilian witness who, obviously it was a traumatic experience for her to go through this, puts things on thumb drives with the help of coworkers in an office, and believes that she sends everything.
So can I, that principle's getting lengthy. Is it, to put words in the government's mouth, is it fair to say that the principle ultimately that you seek to defend in this case is the government's responsibility to search third parties' materials for evidence?
Yes, Your Honor, that is the principle we're looking at. We do not see an end. If the court expands beyond what Williams into something like this, and in Williams we were talking about files actually held by a military unit commander.
So that's the government's legal concern, is where will that line fall?
Yes, Your Honor, and if that's the case here, then I'm not sure where that line ends up. Certainly,
Chief,
the government has conceded that this case could have been done much better.
Chief, may I ask a question? So what about when there is a explicit discovery request by the defense looking for mental health records? You're saying that the trial counsel did not have a responsibility to ask Ms. MS, do you have any mental health records?
No, he did, Your Honor. And I guess if I may, I go back to my...
You're on our clock, not yours, so please continue.
Yes, sir. I go back to my argument about prejudice, and I understand this court's concern, the idea that a better late than never rule somehow makes it appear to trial counsel that it's okay to drag your feet in the hopes that maybe these things won't come up or maybe you won't have to turn them over. I mean, every trial counsel, I think, who would read this case or is following this case or should know that you are always at risk of prosecutorial misconduct allegations, and those are very serious. They get very serious repercussions. But ultimately what we're talking about here is the appellant's ability to receive a fair trial, and did he ultimately come into possession of the information that he was seeking? And he did. And
so if we take the military judge's finding of 20C, then we would disagree with you that he ultimately did, right?
Yes, Your Honor, if you were in a pierce-through.
We have Judge...
What about Dr. Krieg? I think you conceded that there was prejudice with respect to Krieg a few minutes ago.
Yes, Your Honor, there is prejudice.
There is prejudice, so doesn't that end this?
No, Your Honor.
Why doesn't it?
Because there is another remedy, and I guess at that point we start to...
Then we talk about a remedy. Okay, we got a dead guy, he's got a report, and he's got a bunch of notes that evidently would shed more light on this, but they're gone, or we can't get them. Why isn't that prejudicial?
Well, Your Honor, it is prejudicial. There's a very detailed report that was...
Okay, and what remedy is there other than dismissal with prejudice?
The Army CCA indicated that the government could have been required to simply enter that report without any limitations for however the defense counsel wanted to use that particular report.
There's a ton of stuff in that report that's, you know, I would like to ask a bunch of questions if Dr. Krieg was still alive as to what it meant.
Yes, Your Honor. And
you can't question a report.
Yes, Your Honor. And the only other thing I would add with Dr. Krieg is that although the trial counsel certainly created the majority of the problems in this case, the defense counsel is not without responsibilities in this case. Dr. Krieg is someone who should have been known to them just as much as he, probably even more so than by the government. He was noted in family court records, which the government voluntarily disclosed, that were never the subject of a specific discovery request by the government. And it was then only in November that the defense counsel started asking for him. And this is multiple months after discovery had been provided and the first trial date had passed. So the defense is also dragging its feet in regard to some of these items, and then we just create, the problems continue to compound. That doesn't excuse what the government has done, but with regard to the prejudice, I think that should be part of the court's analysis. Pending any questions.
Are there further questions? No? Okay. Thank you very much, counsel, for the government. And we'll now hear from the appellant, the accused, I guess, on rebuttal. Does the record reflect what the current status of the accused is? Is he in the armed forces? Is he still operating under the restrictions that have been indicated in the military judge's findings?
Your Honor, according to the record, there have been some lifting. I believe he was allowed to purchase an automobile for private use. I believe he still has to request leave beyond a certain radius. I'm trying to decipher between what's in the record and what's...
In fairness to the government, is this a knowable fact that is known within the record or not? You're welcome to confer, which would be an odd thing, but go ahead.
May I have a moment, Your Honor?
Yeah, is that everybody okay with that? Yeah. I'd just like to know what the status is right here. Or we can ask them to come back to the court.
I think his status would be interesting. Is he in or is he out?
Yeah. Let me ask this another way. Do you need more time, and or would you like to file something with the court at, you know, by the end of the day, or... Did you just reach agreement on something?
I think we have some agreement, Your Honor. Certainly that his leaves and passes have been approved as requested. He has been allowed to purchase a private automobile, but also he is still a mobilized reservist. So that presumes that he had a civilian job, but he's still being in a holding pattern on active duty now for 2 years.
And his promotion is still suspended or whatever that...
As long as, I believe, his flag is still in place, so...
And counsel for the government, do you agree with the statement that was just provided to the court?
Yes, Your Honor. The most accurate information.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, both of you.
Your Honor, to answer your question about Dr. Krieg and the lesser available remedies, it's clear that the military judge found that when he found his notes were unavailable, that any sort of stipulation to effective testimony would have the exact same concerns that you, Your Honor, Judge Ryan, expressed, that, hey, there's a lot of stuff in this report.
And where did he find out?
I believe it's in, if I may have a brief moment, Your Honor. It's on page 9, Your Honor, of where he found that Dr. Krieg was unavailable for hit, and that Dr. Krieg has tragically died and that his notes are unavailable. He doesn't specifically say that a stipulation of expected testimony is not going to be adequate, but that's the implication when he says he has died and his notes are unavailable.
Now, which way does the report can come in? The notes are gone.
Correct, Your Honor.
Which way does that cut? The report can come in and it's now immune from cross-examination. If the report is exculpatory and you can't cross-examine it, doesn't that, if anything, benefit the defense?
It does in that scenario, Your Honor, but what we don't know is if there's a scenario, and I know this is going to sound funny the way I say it, but the cross-examination could reveal even more exculpatory information because his notes, you know, if his notes have certain statements that are even beyond exculpatory of his report, the defense would have been entitled to them. And the government's assertion that the defense does not have clean hands in this case is patently untrue. The defense requested family court records in March of 2013. Dr. Creed would not talk to anyone until those reports were unsealed, which took 9 months for the government to do.
What if the military judge directed the government to stipulate that Dr. Creed would have said, fill in the blank?
That would have been a proper remedy, Your Honor, if the only violation would have been Dr. Creed. And in addition to that, we also have that live testimony is certainly more effective than paper testimony or stipulated testimony or anything like that. So that would be the defense's position, is that a live witness would be more effective for all of this exculpatory information, Your Honor. The military judge, this is not a case.
Just to be clear, in your view, ultimately it might be possible to do, it would be possible to do a stipulation for Dr. Creed, but that doesn't address the other issues.
Your Honor, our position is that the military judge found that that was not an adequate remedy, and this court should defer to that. We can go back and forth on whether now, hindsight 2020, whether we could do an adequate stipulation to expect the testimony. But the military judge, the one in the best position to find that, found that it was inadequate. Because he imposed a remedy that was within the range and used the proper test, he did not abuse his discretion. And this court should uphold that.
Any questions on rebuttal, please? All right. Thank you, counsel. The court thanks both counsel, and the case is now submitted, and we'll stand in recess for 10 minutes. Thank you very much.